Good morning and welcome to Backchat. I'm Jim Gould.
And I'm Hugh Chiverton. This morning we're talking about what's expected to be a massive budget surplus for the current financial year and government spending priorities. Many analysts are forecasting a surplus of up to $180 billion, which is more than 10 times the official original prediction. That would swell the fiscal reserves to more than $1.1 trillion.
The Financial Secretary, Paul Chan, has been seeking submissions from the public on what to include in his 2018 budget speech, which is due to be delivered at the end of the month. So what should be done with all this cash? Where should the spending priorities be? Developing the economy, supporting healthcare, housing, education, the environment, or all of these? What about tax cuts or tax rebates? And should we be sitting on such large reserves when the basic law requires Hong Kong to strive to achieve a fiscal balance? Email us with your thoughts. Our email address is backchat@rthk.hk. That's backchat@rthk.hk. Or go to our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio 3, and leave a comment there. Or you can give us a call on 233 88 266. And later in the programme, kindergartens and primary schools close early for the holidays amid the flu outbreak. Well, joining us this morning in our Admiralty studio are Kenneth Leung, the legislator representing the accountancy functional constituency.
Good morning.
Good morning. And also David Webb, shareholder activist and founder of website.com. Good morning. And also Vera Yoon, who's assistant lecturer at the Faculty of Business and Economics at the University of Hong Kong. Good morning to you all. Kenneth Leung, perhaps if we could start with you then. Okay, so we're going to have a huge amount of money. How much of it should the financial secretary be spending, and what should his priorities be?
Well, I think he should be spending all on improving our infrastructure. What I mean is not the roads or bridges, but our housing, our healthcare, and our environment. And these are the very pressing issues which the government should tackle. For example, housing. I mean, why don't you, get all the brownfield sites, build the infrastructure, and get the public housing built? I mean, it will cost the government 50, 60 billion to do so. I mean, there are a lot of projects the government can do.
Spend the whole lot.
Well, at least half of it, I think. I mean, if you got 180 billion, I mean, why can't you spend a half of it? And then, part of it could be rebated to the citizens, because, of course, this is political expediency to do so. And if you have a large reserved surplus this year, you don't dish out anything to the citizens, I think that politically it would not be, palatable. But improving our basic infrastructure is very important, our healthy housing, our environment.
So for the housing, you're saying what? Resume the land? You're saying
resume the brownfield site, do all the infrastructure, the roads and the facilities. And in healthcare, you should spend money, at least $5 billion in training and recruiting more nurses and professional healthcare workers. On the environment side, we're talking about renewable energies, but of course, I mean, it has been very slow. We've been very slow in, constructing the solar panels, even they're talking about a smart, lampposts and all that. And all this should be done quickly.
And with the healthcare, are you talking about a long-term commitment?
A long-term commitment to increase the number of nurses, and also on the drug formulary, I think they should spend more money to, expand the kind of clinically more effective drugs. And drugs for rare disease, at least 30 billion dollars to be put into a fund to allow patients to get these better drugs.
What about not getting the money in the first place? What about lowering the tax or returning the money to the people who gave it?
Well, I think there would be, one way or the other, as in the past year, there were some sort of rebates on a tax and all that. But of course, personally, I disagree with all the rebates, but politically, the FS will do that because different political parties will be pressing him to dish out some money. Inevitably, there will be some sort of rebates. And I think we are too early talking about any kind of cut and tax. Now, but of course, I believe that our corporate profits tax rate could be lower to 15 in the long run if we get a broader, you know, base. But of course, we got a lot of, you know, surplus this year. But if interest rate rising and there's some political swing or the mood in the region is not that, you know, favorable, next year will be different. We don't know. I mean, we are doing very well for the past 1 year, but, you know, Hong Kong is subject to big swing and we are a very open economy.
David Webb?
Morning. I have to disagree with quite a bit of that.
Yeah, we always disagree, doesn't matter.
Look, it's not a question of slightly lowering tax rates. We need to massively lower the tax rates because we've been building up these reserves at a humongous rate. The structural surplus is what the government is running. Since the handover 20 years ago, they've amassed more than $1 trillion of our money hoarded in reserves, taken out of the economy. The total surplus you mentioned is actually understated because they're not counting the surplus in the exchange fund above and beyond what they need to back the peg, which is another $500 billion or so of surplus. So there's about $1.6 trillion there, which is more than $200,000 for every person in Hong Kong, Hong Kong dollars. That is being just sequestered, used to invest in foreign equities, Hong Kong equities, and other things that are not giving any useful return to the Hong Kong taxpayer. So the most they could do to, in terms of on the collection side of the income statement, should be to simplify the tax system, to reform it, to have a flat rate. I think 10% profits tax rate, 10% salaries tax rate. Raise the personal allowances and eliminate all the other tax bands so that nobody pays more than they did before and most people will pay less. Abolish gimmicks rather than introduce them. Gimmicks like the housing tax loophole where we tax housing benefits at only 10% of cash payments. Abolish interest rate deduction because that just... the interest deduction on home mortgages, because that it just incentivizes people to overexpose themselves to property, and it distorts the choice between renting and buying, because you don't get a tax deduction when you rent a home. Abolish all of the interventionist stamp duties, which have not in any way achieved their intended effect and never would have done. I said at the beginning that those additional stamp duties reduce turnover, but they don't change the fundamental value of any property. And in terms of the spending side, we do have more than sufficient expenditure on the roads of Hong Kong at the moment. I think we're running out of bridges to build, which is why the government's proposing to create new islands in order to need bridges to connect them. We've pumped about $100 billion into a white elephant bridge that goes to Macau, which the general public won't be allowed to drive upon and which doesn't carry any trains. That side of things is quite well dealt with. On the medical side, I support the need to expand capacity there, but that has to do with increasing the number of doctors' training places in Hong Kong. At our medical schools, they should probably double the rate of production of new doctors, because old doctors are retiring every year. We only have a 40-year lifespan for the average doctor if they stay in Hong Kong after they've qualified. And there's increasing demand from the mainland for quality medical services, from medical tourism, basically. There's a lot of rich people now want to come to Hong Kong and use the private sector, and so that then attracts doctors out of the public sector into the private sector after they've got their training on the public purse. So we need to increase capacity, but also we need to dismantle anti-competitive practices. The medical council runs a closed shop. There are only 12 doctors in the public, in the hospital authority, who are on the so-called limited license. They're allowed to come here for 1 year and practice their specialty without retaking all of their general medical exams. And that's a barrier to entry. If you are an experienced orthopedic surgeon or a heart surgeon or a brain surgeon, you don't want to have to go back to school and take a set of Hong Kong general medical exams before you're allowed to practice here permanently. And the medical council is a barrier to that. So we need the capacity to be able to bring in expertise devotees from anywhere in the world to practice here. So that's just a few of the things they should be doing. They should also look at land lease reform. We're collecting vast amounts of cash in land premiums. And that maintains the developer cartel because it means you need to have a very big balance sheet to take part in those land sales. We should lower those premiums by raising the ground rents and collect more money in future in terms of land rental from the ultimate owners of these properties and bypass the developer landlords and get to the end user. And that would build up a more stable revenue stream for a time when Hong Kong will need it to service an aging population and a reducing workforce. So that's a proposal I've put forward many times before, and it hasn't gone anywhere. Currently, we're only charging 3% of the rateable value as ground rent on new leases, and we need to extend them as well. Currently, they're only 50 years long, which extends 20 years beyond 2047. And there's great uncertainty, or there will be at some point, about what exactly the policy will be when those leases come up for renewal. So it now would be a good time to start extending those leases to 99 or 999 years in exchange for agreeing to those higher ground rentals on the extended portion of the leases.
Okay. So getting into land policy there. All right, Virian, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us once again. Do you lean towards Kenneth Leung, who's saying spend it on housing, spend it on healthcare, or David Webb, who's kind of more saying don't get it in the first place, you don't need it?
Well, I'm saying both, but yeah.
It depends on whether you trust the government, have the competence in making good investment in the future. So if we think that the government is incapable, we should get all our money back, seriously. But if we think there's some public goods that the government should supply more and they are capable in providing it efficiently, then relatively more efficiently, and not wasting it in some infrastructure project, then maybe we should spend it in the long run and make certain plans. For housing, the windfall surplus, a large part of it comes from land sales and, you know, the additional stamp duty. So the reason why we were live in such crowded places with high rent is because we have those hidden tax. So, some political parties actually advocate, you know, we should subsidize the people who have housing need with these money from land and housing. But the core problem of that is we have low elasticity of demand. So which means most of the subsidy will be pocketed by the property owner rather than the people in need. So the proper way of doing it is to actually tax more the property owner for holding the housing, but it's politically not feasible. So, and of course, in the long run, we should increase land production, but it has nothing to do with how much money we have. Actually, we have too much money. So it's about the speed of producing land rather than like how we spend this money. This money couldn't help us to speed up the land production in the short run.
But Kenneth Leung is saying go for the brownfield site and just pay the money. Pay the damn money.
Really a question. They are going to be resuming some land and they will be having to pay full compensation for that under the basic law and under the land resumption ordinance, but it's a matter of political willpower to get on and do that. They're very tentative about that whole approach because they fear protests. The Northeast New Territories, for example, there were big protests in LegCo, about people with vested interests.
We're talking about brownfield and all those sites.
It's rent-seeking thing. And then there's stupidly how much they should be compensated, actually,
So you pay them so much that they don't protest?
Basically, you have to keep bidding them up,
you pay so much that it becomes politically feasible.
Yeah, that is one approach. The other approach is to fill in the sea, which the government favours because that land doesn't belong to anyone except the government yet. They own all of the seabed. And that's why they're advocating big new reclamations. It's the fastest way to create the space. But I think that the government and the general public and the media have probably disconnected two different arguments. One is about the very low interest rate environment, which has driven up valuations, which would have happened regardless of how many stamp duties they imposed. And the other one is about whether there is a material shortage of housing. Now, the average number of people per household has been steadily dropping in the Census and Statistics Department surveys. And that's largely a function of rigidity in the public housing system. So when your kids grow up and leave, you don't get moved to a smaller unit. you stay in the unit you've got. There are probably 20,000 or so households who are in subdivided units, and those need to be accommodated, but that's a very small increase in our total housing stock. So I'm slightly concerned that people have confused a bubble in valuations with a real, with a perceived but not real shortage of housing. And when the market starts to correct, as it will eventually, when interest rates rise more materially in the United States, the government will be realizing that they've overdone it, and they've got another 200,000 units coming for 20,000 or 30,000 households that need them, and we end up with high vacancy rates and a big crash in demand, or a big surplus of property. So it's easy for people to look at one moving target, the price of property, and think perhaps that indicates a great shortage rather than just a surplus demand, and they need to possibly rethink that. The lots of hand wringing that's going on about the how much more housing we could produce may actually be misguided, and we'll think very differently about it.
I think one
time.
Thing we need to look at is the per capita, you know, household occupancy, the floor area, because we are much less than Singapore or the other Asian countries. Of course, we want to improve the quality of the people living in the public housing as well. That's why they are renewing or putting down all the old units. Of course, there could be some nominal vacant units, but I think many of these housing estates are due for redevelopment as well. So I think we need to factor this into account as well when you talk about housing supply. But I think one way, I think in the housing market, the government would need to have some sort of more intervention in it. Well, of course, I am a champion of free market economy. But,
you just advocated intervention. How can you be?
Well, but housing is now a necessity, a necessity rather than a commodity. So I think there should be some more political willpower to do it.
Vera Yuen, you said it's a question of what people trust the government to do. I think the people do support the government and do have a taste for more public housing, for better public housing, and for better public health care. Don't they? They do trust the government when it comes to housing and health.
For health, they actually have a 10-year hospital development program starting from 2016. So it takes time to spend those $200 billion in redeveloping 11 hospitals.
Yeah, and but one new hospital. They still need the doctors to fill them.
That's one issue we've talked about in the past few weeks. There's shortage of medical personnel,
professionals, then.
Doctors and nurses.
We've got to remove those barriers to entry
it's
from overseas and increase the training.
But
in Hong Kong.
For housing, I talked to the people in a committee of the land supply, the creation of land, and some of them doubt whether the government really wants to do it, and it's kind of colluding with the land developer and stuff, because they are not very proactive in doing so. So it, actually the people in the committee want to push the government to do it like faster than it should be. So
one
the political gridlock that the government does not want to touch, and they would
Because if they want the high land policy, because they like the income?
Well, I think it's politically they would rather tackle things gradually rather than to have a strong.
They'd rather reclaim land, I think.
Yeah. Yes.
But there's also, to Kenneth's point about space, yes, it would be nice if everybody had twice as much space per capita per person. But that would, of course, entail a roughly 50% correction in valuation so they could afford the extra space. Would that be politically acceptable? I think maybe it would, because we've more than doubled prices in the last 10 years, probably tripled in 10
it's
years.
It's never politically correct for property owners, the problem is.
Well, this is the question, because, you see, the government that makes that calculation and says we can't. We dare not do that. We dare not allow prices to materially fall. But I think, actually, quite a lot of the sort of 40, 50-somethings, where I'm a 50-something now, they're probably thinking, well, how are my children ever going to afford their own home in Hong Kong? It's all very well that I've doubled my money, but I'd probably like prices to go down so that collectively my family can own more of it. My kids can have their own home and so on. So I think if quite a lot of the voters would feel that way, and it wouldn't have the same implications that the housing correction in 1998 had when 2003, when there were people protesting about falling house prices. I think things have moved on a bit. But on the public housing side, another big reform is needed. The government doesn't need to own and build all of these flats. They simply need to make sure people have a home. And if they separated the subsidy and said to people, OK, we're going to sell off this stock of housing units, we're going to encourage people to move around as freely as they can with a rental voucher, and we're not going to put all the poor people in ghettos in Tin Shui Wai or anywhere else. We're not going to say that area must all be poor people in poor housing. We're going to say that's housing. That's just housing. It's going to be rented at free market prices, and we will give everybody the rental support they need to pay those rents. We'll stop pretending that it doesn't cost the government anything, because there's an opportunity cost there. And instead of charging the people $1,000 a month, we'll charge them whatever the market rate for that flat is, but they will get the full subsidy if they need it.
OK, I mean, housing is obviously a very important issue, perhaps the number one issue for many people. But just moving away from that slightly, can we ask Kenneth Leung and Vera Yoon, what about that... the suggestion that David Webb made before about taxation? I mean, obviously, government revenues are more than sufficient, so we've built up this huge surplus. Should we be thinking about cutting taxes to 10%, a suggested corporate tax, 10% salaries tax?
No, I think I always disagree with David on the taxation side.
Because you're an accountant.
No, that's
like matter. Because, yes.
Because
self-interest.
I think, it's not self-interest, because I think... the tax system is simple enough. On the salary side, I think we should just stick to one system. We got the 15% and the progressive. I think we just have to stick to the progressive, because I think it's fair.
No, it's not.
Well, it's complicated.
Fair, progressive. It's
not complicated.
Because arbitrage.
Arbitraging. I mean, there's only one system. It's the progressive. We should stick to the progressive and not the basic. And
it's not simple. Look, you hardly collect any revenue from the 2%, 7% tax bands anyway.
Well, maybe they can reform the progressive rate.
And then we have 17%, which actually says that lower income people who are paying the 17% rate, they pay more incremental dollars until they reach that magic number when they start paying 15% flat rate beyond that.
And the stamp duty side, it doesn't matter. It's inelastic to transaction and shares, whether you have 0.1%, 0.2% revenue.
That's nonsense.
I think it's not. It is inelastic. It's like the property...
Believe me, I know a little bit about the stock market.
Well, because you know about the stock market. If you look at
if you want to increase stamp duty on those,
it is inelastic, because people have so much money that they don't
simply
really
not true. That's simply not true.
No, the transaction give me some evidence volumes, that it's true.
Yeah, I'll give you evidence. Look at the United States. The transaction volumes, the rate of turnover in stocks is much, much higher because there's no stamp duty on transactions there. The rate of turnover in the property market here would be much higher. People would be more ready to buy a home if they didn't have to pay more than a year's rent in stamp duty, even if they are a permanent resident with only one home.
Yeah, that's four and a quarter percent. The increase in the special stamp duty and all that doesn't really hurt the
It has
the
impeded
price.
Transactions. It's reduced the turnover in the market. It's made it make
it's
things less flexible.
It's reduced the transaction in the secondary market. It's not in the primary market.
Of course. Both of them. But the secondary market is far bigger than the primary market. There's over a million privately owned units in Hong Kong, and there's about 20,000 to 2% increase every year in the supply from the new homes. It's a no-brainer that if I say to you, when you conduct that transaction, I will take away 5% of its value as taxes, you'll be less willing to conduct that transaction. You wouldn't trade stocks every day if there was a 5% stamp duty.
But that is not really 5%. 0.1% is no
volume.
Brainer
for
the
point is, it's distorting the market. It's distorting behavior.
It's a distortion of behavior.
Yeah.
So every tax has distortion, according to you then, right?
No. There are much more efficient ways of collecting taxation, including profits tax and salaries tax,
the more efficient way is to do a broadly based tax like GST.
No.
No, why not?
Because if you look at GST and understand it properly, you will see that that's simply a gross profits tax before deduction of non-taxed items. So it's inputs minus outputs. You get relief on the things you buy.
Well, there are two sorts. One is input minus output. The other is based on the gross sales price and added 2%, 3%. That's the easier way of doing so. If you got just a turnover tax or value-added tax is two different,
We already have a broad tax-based system.
Well, if you lower tax to, say, 10%, maybe 5% for the individuals or the profits tax, I agree, but
Well, I don't know why you're so opposed to reducing taxes.
I'm not opposed.
Most of your electorate would be happy to pay lower tax.
Well, I am happy to lower it if you can ensure me that the income stream will be, you know.
Why are you opposed to lowering taxes?
I'm not opposed to lowering taxes. Do you agree with either of them?
I think in the long run, we want a stable tax rate. So in the long term, if we have lowered, there's no way we can raise it.
Yes, we can. We've done it before. We've put it up and down as needed.
During Donald Trump's time, we have done it.
But I remember.
I think for profit tax, globally, there's a trend to actually lower it. So I think to remain competitive, I think there's space for us to lower it. And if we pay salary tax more than profit tax, then probably the poor people will be unhappy. So
no, you have to keep them in line for a simple reason, that if you don't, people will arbitrage. Business owners, people who own a company will say...
Open a company and then we just...
If you're going to charge more in salaries tax, then I will just... Pay myself a big dividend. If you're going to charge more in profits tax, then I'll pay myself a big bonus. So you have to keep the rates in line. But the fundamental thing is we are collecting too much money, and the simplest way to address that is to cut taxes and to abolish the inefficient ones. Whether or not you think stamp duty on stocks should be abolished, and there's a debate around that because it would encourage high-frequency trading. It's very clear that the stamp duty on property is prohibitive to many business decisions. For example, if you want to buy an office and fit it out for your business, then you have to pay 8.5% stamp duty.
Okay,
now,
David Webb.
David,
sorry to have to interrupt you there. We'll return to that after the news summary at 9 o'clock. We've got a break for 3 minutes for the news. We're talking about the budget surplus and spending priorities. A quick look at the weather. It's going to be mainly... cloudy and dry, cold in the morning, sunny periods later in the day. The outlook is for temperatures and relative humidity rising towards the weekend. Currently it's 13 degrees, humidity 48%. And welcome back to Backchat with Hugh Chiverton and me, Jim Gould. This morning we're talking about the expected huge budget surplus and what should be the government's spending priorities. And we've got a few messages from listeners here.
So this is from Henry on Facebook, who says, for the basic law provision, Carrie Lam, Joseph Yam and Paul Chan have all said in the past that they would be flexible and would use the surplus constructively and not just allow the reserves to pile up. I think we should put the reserves to work in addressing long-term problems, build hospitals together with associated works in related fields. Transport issues like resolving or reducing congestion, like ERP, should be revisited. Sports games / senior Olympics for senior citizens. Half price for senior citizens using swimming pools, expediting building smart cities, getting more students to spend time travelling, or student exchange with Belt and Road countries, which recently include South and Central America, etc. That's Henry's suggestion. A quick message from Lewis, who says, please tell Webb to stop talking over people. It's very rude. He's not listening now. David. Yeah, anyway. Carry on. Yeah, and a couple more comments. This is from Fergus, who says salaries tax needs further reduction. The big four lobby for business. No one effectively lobbies for Joe Average, except RTHK's backchat Joe Average. Joe pays what is in effect a throughput tax minus some piddling deductions. Business pays a profit tax after infinite deductions. Compare the two tax rules, grossly inequitable. How many deductions will the SJ be taking for her company-held property? She won't pay profits tax for a long, 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 long time. Imagine if Joe Average, the salaries worker, just paid up tax on his yearly surplus of cash. Someone is getting screwed, the system is skewed, and yet Carrie Lam still argues for a reduced business taxation. Whose pocket is she really in? Asks Fergus.
And this from Richard. Richard says that the FS asks for our input, but that's a ruse to take the heat out of opposition. There can be so much input, he can argue they cancel each other out, and then he can do his own thing. He'll do what sectoral interests most press for. Before we get carried away with the hot air of debate, we should press for abolition of the functional constituencies, and our input might be more meaningful than surplus hot air. John writes, the surplus just brings home the muddled thinking and or double standards in the thinking of the FS. He cancelled the electric vehicle subsidy when our streets are choked up with gunge. What a hypocrite. And Jackie writes, the government should consider proper benefits for the elderly. Cutting tax does not help them as they are not working. there should also be a proper planning for hospitals. It's no good just throwing 500 million at the hospitals like Carrie Lam did last week.
And one more comment from Alan, who says, I see your topic is Financial Secretary Paul Chan has been seeking submissions from the public on what to include in his budget speech. Why do you participate in this charade? Has there ever in all history been any submission form the public has that the FS has adopted? I think that should be submission from the public that the FS has adopted. This is just a joke. Like every public consultation in Hong Kong, the result is preordained. Public opinions are solicited, and any that agree with the government's plans are highlighted. Everything else is ignored. I spent many, many man hours preparing submissions for such consultations in the past before I realised how futile and insincere the whole procedure is. That view comes from Alan.
Well, we have with us this morning Kenneth Leung, who's the legislator representing the accountancy functional constituency, also David Webb, a shareholder activist and founder of website.com, and Vera Yoon, assistant lecturer at the Faculty of Business and Economics at the University of Hong Kong. And also joining us on the line now, we have Civic Party legislator and Dr. Kwok Kar Kee. Good morning, Dr. Kwok.
Good morning.
Perhaps if we could just come to you now. There was a mention earlier from one of our correspondents talks about the 500 million that Carrie Lam said the hospital authority could spend as an emergency measure in the current flu crisis. But I imagine you will be hoping that that much of this very large budget surplus will be devoted towards improving the healthcare system.
Yeah, I think the effect speaks for itself. You see the winter surge, you see the lack of the vaccination, you see the patients are actually jamming in the ward, they need to sleep around the toilet, being in the corridor. And this is something entirely not new, has been for years. And, okay, we're talking about figures. The figures that we have facing is number one, the overall spending on the healthcare is poor. We're spending about 17% of the total government expenses on the health budget, which is something which is promised by which was promised by Donald Zhang in year 2009. And we are having the elderly population of 17%, and 8 years later we'll be wise up to 25%, a quarter of our population will be elderly. So you can imagine how poor we are. Now, we have been for long lacking the hospital bags. 20 years ago, per thousand, we have 4.2 bags, hospital bags. And do you know what is the figure now? The figure is 3.8. But yet, we have probably doubled the elderly population. And for any elderly, the use of the acute bag is 8 times the so-called the general population. That means we are facing a huge demand in the hospital bags and also hospital care. So that's why years and years we have so many patients jamming in the ward and they are lacking any care. You go to any medical ward in Hong Kong, you know, we describe it's just like a battlefield. Patients, relatives, nurses, doctors, they all jam to a tiny places. What's the job of the doctors every day? They kick out the patients. Because if they're not doing the kick out the patient, they can't accommodate new emergency patients. And that is something we are doing month by month. But, you know, the promise or the estimation from the government, I'm talking about a few years ago when they brought up the issues of the health finance as a means to cure our long-term health problem. They are estimating this year, 2016 or 2017, the overall expenses on healthcare will be 20 to 24% of total government expenses. But now we are spending only 17%. So, you know, we are facing a so-called the structural surplus. Because the surplus is something, you know, we are talking about, when we talk about surplus, it must be something very ad hoc, uncalculated, unexpected. But no, 10 years, we are facing a huge amount of surplus. And this year, no exception. We are facing probably slightly to be 170 or even up $180 billion of surplus. But yet, the patient facing lack of bags, lack of drugs, lack of vaccine. So what the hell we are doing in Hong Kong. It is a lacking of the planning, lacking of a site as to how to adjust or to allocate the resources. So on one hand, we are facing a very, very narrow foundation, so-called narrow tax foundation. So I'm a bit reluctant to endorse, any ideas of cutting the present taxes because,
David Webb, do you want to get
Dr. Scott, you're talking in percentage terms, or in terms of the percentage of the budget spent on healthcare.
Yeah.
But of course, the budget has been expanding because of other large items in the denominator, like the bridges to Macau and so on, and the express rail link. So, in dollar terms, is it true that we have actually been increasing our real expenditure on healthcare?
I think
it is. And as Vera mentioned, there's a $200 billion plan for hospital expansions, which takes time to build. So there is actually quite a lot of more money already allocated and on the way to improving the system. Is that true?
That is not true, because now the healthcare, your overall healthcare in terms of GDP, GDP is something, it's actually corresponds to the whole economic output of a society. In any where or developed state in the world, it is already more than 10%.
Yeah, but it's not good to compare like that, because we have one of the best and most efficient healthcare system in Hong Kong. We spend very little, but we...
Sacrifice
and also for our education. I think we should spend more, but it's not to, raise it to the average rate of, healthcare spending of the OECD.
Since you are a doctor, do you support...
No, we are spending 2.8%
of the GDP. Do you support increasing...
This is a figure which is only comparable...
No, I agree, we should raise it.
Nigeria, we're talking about African countries, 2.8%. It's a shame to Hong Kong.
Well, I don't think we want it to reach American levels where the drug companies dominate the system.
Oh, I'm not talking about American levels. I never talk about
American. And the health insurance companies take out huge profits.
Of the insurance, because they're spending more than 15% of GDP, which is crazy. But yet, we are spending less than we should on our patients.
But what do you think would be a reasonable proportion of the budget to spend on health?
Now, I think we have the figures. The so-called planning ratio of which is made 30 years ago, on the backs is per thousand 5.5. At that time, we are only having less than 8% of the elderly population. And there has been a study done by the hospital authority. For the elderly, the use of the acute bag is 8 times the normal. So, if you're going up to the so-called standard of the government, we are saying the lacking of about 15,000 bags. And the government promised in 10 years' time they have 5,000. So we are still lacking 10,000 back. But even if we have decided to build a hospital...
But do you agree that we also have a shortage of doctors in Hong Kong?
You are suffering a shortage of more than 10 years, because from the time of the inception of ideas of building a hospital to the time that the hospital really can provide service, you're talking about 10 years. But if you're not doing anything at this moment, 10 years later will be more disastrous than now.
But they are, aren't they? There's a big... hospital expansion plan underway.
No. You go to
Vera mentioned
the
earlier.
So-called
the rebuilding.
It's a policy address in 2016.
Now,
10 years.
Go back and check what has been promised. The only new hospital promised by the
Kai Tak, right?
The Kai Tak, 2,400 beds, and they never promised as to how to Queen Elizabeth Hospital, because they're moving the whole batch of the doctors and nurses from the Queen Elizabeth to the Kai Tak. They never talk about how to use the land left by QE. But I think, my gut feeling, they maybe change the use of that, because it's a very precious land which can sell millions of luxurious apartments. So, so this is something we must keep our eye on. And no matter you put it in QE, you put it anywhere else, but the story is, the message is very clear. We are leading in the real need of new planning on hospital beds and also new hospitals. This is something very certain. We all will be...
What about the doctor's shortage? Should the medical council stop resisting the arrival of talent from overseas?
I think that's another issue.
Year, we
or should we spend more money on training doctors?
Of course, we should.
More places?
This year we have 420 new graduates, and next year we'll be 460. And I'm not opposing any increase on the doctors, nurses, physiotherapists. We actually in the facing a real shortage of manpower, resources, hospital bed, you name it, we are getting nothing from it.
Okay.
And yet we are spending billions of dollars on, you know, giving the candy to the people. I don't think it is a right attitude adopted by the government. It is very short-sighted.
Kenneth Leung, so Paul, yep, Chan will give his budget speech on the 28th of this month. What are you hoping that will be included in it?
Well, I think definitely what I said just now is about, you know, a very long-term planning on housing and the land supply. And they need to do the proper infrastructure, not those, you know, billions of dollars of bridges or express rail. I mean, you do the proper infrastructure and you develop the brownfield site. And then, of course, I think, of course, I heard about Dr. Kwok's concern about, you know, not really having a real increase in hospital beds, because the 10 years commitment of $200 billion on the hospital expansion plan is a grand plan which we have to monitor very carefully. And of course, I also agree with, we need an increase in supply for medical professionals, doctors, nurses, you know, physiotherapies and all that. And also, of course, I have just mentioned the drug formulary list is very restrictive on those, you know, currently the patients can subscribe to is very limited types of drugs. And we need to build in. This is something which, you know, our surplus can help the patients. The drugs. Okay. We need better drugs, right, and more drugs to cover rare disease.
A right, couple of comments from listeners I'd like to share. Bowen picking up on the issue of the relationship to the basic law and the commitment in the basic law to balance the finance.
But I think what the basic law needs is not a year-by-year balance. Uh-huh. You need to take a snapshot of, say, 5 years, 10 years. You strike a balance.
For 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's been a surplus, as I said, for a very considerable period of time. Okay, Bowen says on this, Kenneth Leung is spot on in saying that the surpluses we have been having for so long should be used to resume the brownfield sites and settle our housing woes. If $50 to $60 billion is roughly all that's needed to resume the brownfield sites, which is not surprising, as experienced surveyors have said for a long time that brownfield sites owners have no problem having to move out if they are paid reasonable and adequate compensation. Some have suggested that the agricultural land, lots of which is now held by economic rent seekers, can also be resumed, and not even that much has to be paid to generate a handsome profit for these people, as the land was bought at a low cost as agricultural land. That the above has not been done thus far needs to be fully accounted for by the government, as it's not even a matter of political will, as we're talking about resuming land where people have long settled on as their homes. As a matter of fact, where it's land where people have lived on for a home, the government has not shown a lack of political will in steamrolling over the opposition, as in the cases of opposition to spending hundreds of billions over White Elephant Rail and bridge projects. Seeing that the relevant officials have clearly not strived to achieve fiscal balance as required in Article 107 and also settle our housing woes while also putting an end to the acrimonious public squabbles over the issue, why has none of them been disqualified for failing to uphold the basic law, which they have sworn to uphold upon assuming office? And a comment from Peter, who says, it's outrageous that the Treasury adopts a loan shark strategy to collection of its imposts on the people. 1 minute late on paying our rates, and they slap a 5% penalty on you. It's not as if they are in such dire need of the cash. Outside the monopoly or cartel sector, no firm would dare charge such a penalty on its debtors. It would rapidly lose customers. We don't have an alternative to this government, hence their smug indifference. Thanks for nothing. That comes from Peter. Sounds like the voice of experience there, Peter.
Okay, anybody like to respond to any of those points quickly?
I'd like to say something about squandering the cash. Rather than engage in $6,000 handouts, as one financial secretary did, and rather than engage in non-means-tested handouts in the form of fruit money or a $2 fare scheme, which I will qualify for in 13 years' time, and I certainly won't need. Why don't we focus the resources, welfare resources, on those who do need it, and then we can afford to do more for them? And that would be a better approach to the welfare system. I come back to the point that this structural surplus must be addressed. It is against the basic law. There's also an obligation in the basic law to grow the budget commensurate with GDP and not faster than that. In other words, the share of GDP shouldn't rise, but it has. It's risen from about 18% to about 22%. And the amount we're collecting is more like 24% of GDP because of the surplus. So bringing those things down would stimulate the economy, and removing the taxes which are causing friction in the economy would also stimulate the economy. We'd have more of an economy to tax, and that would increase the efficiency of Hong Kong.
Okay, great. Thanks very much. Perhaps we could alert our listeners to the fact, little bit of early notice here, we'll be carrying the budget live on the 28th of this month, and then a couple of days later we'll be joined by the Financial Secretary for a phone-in programme, and you'll be able to put your points to him directly. That'll be in early March. Thanks very much to our guest today. You just heard from David Webb, shareholder activist and founder of website.com. Also Kenneth Leung, the accountancy sector legislator. Vera Yoon, assistant lecturer at the Faculty of Business and Economics at the University of Hong Kong. And we also heard from Kwok Kar Kee, civic party legislator and doctor. And